Go Loud. Talking Bollocks, a Go Loud original podcast. Sponsored by Right Style Furniture. Right price, right style, right now. Visit rightstyle.ie.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
Are you still sitting on a beanbag in your sitting room like you're 17?
Grow up and head to Right Style Furniture. They've got proper, comfy, stylish gear and they're Irish and family run too.
The house packages are class. For just €3,649, you get an electric sofa set, full dining setup, and beds with mattresses. That's a serious bang for your buck.
I got my corner sofa off them, and I haven't stood up since.
They've got locations in Font Hill, Belgard, and now Omni Park, open every day and late on a Thursday and Friday in Font Hill and Omni.
One-stop shop for kitting out the gaff. Don't say we never looked after you.
Exactly. Right price, right style, right now.
Visit www.rightstyle.ie. And when you shop in store, tell them Terence and Calvin sent you, and they'll throw a discount on top of that as well. So get down to Right Style Furniture today.
What you waiting for? Put your back in it. Just a little more. Throw your whip in the door. Fill your body up. Walk it hard and low. When you finish that.
The hip knocker.
Go down. Go down. Go down.
Episode 263 of the Talking Bollocks podcast, brought to you by Go Loud. It's me, COB.
It's me, 30 Flower.
And today we're joined by
Deirdre O'Kane.
Deirdre, just let's put a pin on that. We were just talking there about our favourite Kevin Bridges joke.
Yeah.
What's yours?
Well, you're a big Kevin Bridges fan, so yeah. You probably have loads.
My favourite one is the house rice one. Do you know
house
that one?
House rice?
Yeah.
Go on.
Well, he calls it house rice.
Yeah. This is the problem. The Kevin Bridges impressions are going to be difficult.
Yeah. So he has...
Go on, we might as well make a show of ourselves.
He has a story that when he was growing up, he went for a sleepover in his mate's cafe.
Oh, yes.
And they were ordering a takeaway because it was a Friday or a Saturday night.
Yes.
And he's going through all the order and he's taking out the chips and the chicken balls and what have you, but there's no rice. So he pulls his friend Stan, he goes, oh, they forgot the rice. This happens all the time when we order as well. Just ring them up, they drop it back. And he goes, oh no, we didn't order rice. Like, we're going to make the rice ourselves. And he goes, what? He's like, you ordered all the takeaway, but you're going to make the rice yourself. He's like, yeah. And he's like, now my friend came down as house rice. Do you know what I mean? But obviously he's like, house rice? House rice?
House rice?
Ah, oh, what a man.
What's your favourite joke, Deirdre?
Of Kevin's.
Yeah.
He was talking about the price of avocados. Do you remember this? Price of avocados. I said, mate, there better be a fucking toy in here.
very good, yeah. Oh, very good. Deirdre, I have a
question. Accent dodgy, but go on anyway.
We always start with a zinger, but I'm going to give you like an either or the question like that. So we were chatting off air as well. You have your fingers in everything. You do a bit of everything, Deirdre.
I think you have to in this business. I think you have to have your fingers in 10 pies.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. And it's a few bob extra as well. But but you do a bit of everything. If you had to give one thing, if you could only do one thing out of acting, comedy and your podcast, which one would you stick with? I was going to say if you
That's
could get...
That's very hard now.
I was going to say if you could get rid of one thing, I think I have an idea what you would.
If I could choose the acting work, I might choose the acting. If I had a say in what the acting work was.
Right, okay.
Because I wouldn't be loving it all. But if I had to say, if I could do some TV show that I loved, I'd be very happy. And I only say that because the graft of the stand-up means, you know, you have to write every show and perform every show and produce every show and sell every show. So it's hard graft.
Yeah.
As I say with the acting, that's a little holiday.
Yeah, do you not get the big jobs in the acting though, because that's what you're throwing your hat in for. No? So you're like,
you never get, unless you're in the top 0.01% of actors, unless you're a huge star, you don't get to choose.
Yeah. But
to a certain extent, you do, a little.
Yeah, but I mean, like, if there's a role that you'd be like, oh, Jesus, I'm not into that at all, you're not going to get that because you're not applying for it, is what I mean.
Yeah.
You only get jobs that you apply for.
This is true.
You know what I'm trying to say?
But how many do you actually get?
Oh, Jesus, yeah, that's a different story. Like, what's profession with the highest unemployment rate?
I wonder what the percentage is. I'd say for every 10 you don't get, you get one, yeah.
Jesus.
Maybe.
That's rough, that.
It could be worse. It could be more. It could be higher than that. Depends on how often you're auditioning, too.
Yeah.
Like in LA, they're auditioning a couple of times, 4 or 5 times a week. They're just auditioning constantly. What makes it harder here is actually getting the meetings. Mm. And you might get one a month.
And is that just down to lack of productions?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not enough going on. It's a small country.
Yeah.
So what did you say? You'd stick with acting?
if I had the choice of the work, if somebody was telling me I was in a fantastic sitcom with a cracking cast and a great director, then I would say yes to that, yeah.
It's funny because I thought you would have said you'd get rid of acting just because of you don't get to pick the roles all the time.
Yeah, but that's what I just said, if yeah. I could pick.
If you could pick.
I did
if
have
you
a,
could pick.
I did have yeah. a, yeah. I feel guilty now on the stand-up, yeah. which is my current love.
You said if you could pick the sitcom, if there was one sitcom in history that you could have been on, what would you pick?
Will and Grace.
Will and Grace?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
When I watched Will and Grace, there was a couple of seasons of that I just thought were off the charts good. Woody Harrelson was in one of those seasons. And watching those four actors, to me, good comedy actors is like watching great tennis. They're just so fast, bouncing off each other, making a script alive. And I remember looking at that show and thinking, fuck, I want that job. That's the dream. They are living the dream.
They would have been on some poke as well, wouldn't they?
Oh, will you stop?
Yeah.
I mean, this is the thing. We don't even have it. You know yeah. what I mean? We're not even close to it.
Yeah.
You know, Friends?
Yeah.
They were on a million each in episode.
By the end.
All the actors?
Yeah.
Were on a million each. How many episodes?
Oh, geez. What, there's 20 something in a season, isn't there?
I mean, how many seasons did they do? By the end, they were on that. But you can sure they were on half of that, halfway through.
And would they be doing 15 episodes in a season?
No, 20.
Yeah, but money in America, lads, is money in America.
Yeah.
You have a successful pilot in America. You are printing money.
Oh, yeah. Jesus Christ. And there's loads of them. The Rogan fellas had to sign in 2 9-figure deals.
Oh, yeah. No, they're on millions for their pods. Yeah, we are just, we need to travel the population fairly lively.
Yeah.
Deirdre, tell us, where are you from? What was life like growing up for you?
Oh, God, I'm a bit of an outsider. I'm from Drogheda, but neither of my parents are really of the town. So my mother's from Derry. My dad was born in England, even though he came back young and did grow up in Drogheda, but then he was off at a boarding school, and so was I. So I'm a bit of an outsider kid, but Drogheda is my hometown, yes.
And what, you said you went to boarding school?
I did, yeah.
What was that like?
Well, it was my norm. So for me, it was normal. When I talk about it in the show that I'm still doing at the moment, and when I look back on it, I realise, oh, no, that wasn't normal at all. That was quite mad and very old fashioned, very old school. But I am old now. But like, you know, mass, like before breakfast, 7 days a week.
Right.
And you didn't come home on the weekends, Ryan?
No.
No. Fuck.
No.
What, 7 days a week?
Yeah. Got home every 6 or 8 weeks, sometimes 12 weeks.
Did you come home for the Easter break?
Easter and Christmas and summer, and then the odd
midterm or something.
Yeah.
What's the point in that?
What do you mean, what's the point?
It's not just school then, is it?
Oh, no. Yeah.
Fucking hell, that's rough,
what,
that.
What do you do on the weekend? See, this is so alien to us.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's alien to most, let's be fair, it's alien to most people.
Well, you're not the first person who said that's went to boarding school.
Yeah.
You're probably the first person we've actually questioned about it.
Who else did you have?
Arlo Hanlon went to boarding school.
Arlo was a boarder, was he?
Yeah. There was other people, I can't remember off the top of my head.
But it obviously makes you funny.
That's what I was thinking. It must be people up that neck of the woods, you know what I mean? They're like, yeah, get the kids out of here.
Yeah, get rid of them. Why did we have them?
There's too much going on around here. This is banned the country. Get the kids out of the boarding school.
There was a snobbery around boarding school for a while. I think it was considered to be a good thing to do, a good education. If you could afford to send your kids, it was considered to be a...
I know this is a bit like kind of prodding in, but do you feel like you got a better education because you went to boarding school?
No.
No?
In some ways, it was very good. I mean, I think I was very independent, very young.
Yeah.
By the time I left school, like I travelled a lot. I'd get on a plane. I'd go anywhere on my own. You get very used to just doing things for yourself. And that was good. I'll tell you what was good in our school was music and drama. And they're the things I was interested in. So I was lucky.
Yeah.
After that, nah. You've no street smarts. You're an awful tick on the street smarts. I really had to learn them the hard way now.
Yeah.
An awful idiot.
You weren't going to leave and start selling drugs like.
An awful idiot. Yeah. Jesus.
You said music and drama there. Yeah. Were you into them from an early age?
Well, the music like was just like, I love music. I'm not a I can't call myself a muso because I'm just not cool. I don't have a cool bone in my body, but I obviously like music. Who doesn't?
Yeah,
but the school was very musical. Like there was a orchestra and there was choir and there was all that.
Right,
la di da.
So when did you realise you weren't interested in acting?
Very young, primary school. From doing shows and plays in primary school. But I wouldn't necessarily say there was anything valid behind it other than I'd like to be a star. Not I'm good at this or any of that. I think it was pure.
And it wasn't in the family or
anything. Well, shoot for that.
Yeah.
You come from a big family?
Well, there's five of us, five kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, all artistic. Not all in the business, but definitely all artistic.
Yeah, like they performative, like they could.
Yeah, I have a sister, my sister Emer is a musician. Grania did a bit of improv and a bit of drama. So it's all in there. Do you know that show called Help Me Buy a Home? Virgin Media? Help people to buy homes. Do either of you need to buy a home?
No, I already have one now.
Well done.
I could deal with a gaff, yeah. Yeah.
Did the pod get you that?
No, that's what the side hustle is for.
He has a few quid.
But, well, your sister's involved in that, is she?
Yeah, she presents it.
Oh, does she?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. So
yeah, but the grandmam lads are in it with her.
All right.
Yeah.
So why are we not getting a fucking show about helping people buy gaffs then?
Because you haven't got a gaff.
Yeah, so we can help you.
Help him buy a gaff.
Yeah, but
you can have a show called Help Him Buy a Gaff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like we can go around and be like, this is what I had to do and this is what you're going to have to do. And
oh no, I get that. But
us two in danger, there we go.
Yeah, compete with the sisters.
Why not? Yeah.
Yeah.
They already have a formula that seems to be working. Just copy and paste it.
Yeah.
That's what most people do.
Go from there. But sorry, it runs in your family basically, yeah? So what's your first taste then when...
I can't say it runs the family because it doesn't professionally. Do you mean being artistic?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, you kind of can't.
Yeah, no, none of us have proper jobs. Actually, my brother will kill me if I say that.
Your sister presents a show. You
exactly.
Can't say it doesn't run in the family.
That's telly, yeah.
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 And does that not count?
No, it does. Does.
Right, okay. I thought you and the sister were out having a barney. You were coming out the sleigh out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, like she doesn't even have a job.
No, she's definitely artistic. Right, she was. Yeah.
So, sorry, what I'm saying is, what's your first kind of leap into acting then? You know, like you said, you were into it as a child, primary school. You go off the boarding school, you're doing it in there as well. What's your first kind of taste of it? And you're like, oh, this is what it is.
Where did I begin? I left school and I did... there was no drama courses. There was nothing you could do here. So most people now will head towards the Gaiety School of Acting or the Lear or whatever. So they didn't exist. So I was like, okay, what'll I do? So I applied to the College of Marketing because they gave you 30 quid a week to go to college. That was up in Mountjoy Square. And when I was there, the Gaiety School advertised for a course, like a 9-week course, the first one they ever did. So I applied for that and I did it and I got it. So I did that. And then they asked us if we wanted to be extras in Borstal Boy and the Gaiety. And I said, yeah. So I got me one line and started as a little extra. And then got another job that was like a false course job, that, like with a theatre company in Sligo called Acorn. And I was with them for a while. And then you just used to try and get your card, your equity card, and you try and get an agent, and off you go and just be auditioning and getting the odd thing. And I did okay. I did well as an actor. It was 10 years in before stand-up ever was on my radar.
So what, you're going around in different kind of theatre productions back then?
Theatre and a bit of telly and a bit of film, a bit of whatever you can get your hands on.
Yeah. What was it like going from theatre then to telly?
Well, you're just clueless. You're just learning on the job. It's like, I remember my friend Frankie McCaffrey telling me the first time he was on a film job, thinking, God, there's somebody very enterprising with a van over there selling like chips and food. And he didn't understand that this was catering. That catering is part of a film production. You don't know anything. You forget, like people will just presume you know what you're doing, but of course you don't know what you're doing. Every time you rock up on a set for the first time, everything is new. You can only find out by doing it the first time and learning. And you're so green. You're so green around the ears. Oh my God. I think kids now know so much more.
Yeah,
I mean, the drama schools are... You know, the courses are robust and they're good and they've got their phones and they know everything. We were clueless. Really clueless.
You said it was, 10 years later before stand-up was on your radar?
Yeah.
How does that come about then? Why is that even on your radar?
It came onto my radar by accident because my fella, Steve, was working on the Cat Laps Festival in Kilkenny. And I was given out complaining because I was an unemployed actress. And he said, well, why don't you come down and make tea, make yourself useful? And he said, you'll get one of those lanyards and you can go and watch some comedy. And I'd never watched any live comedy in my life ever. And I was just blown away by this. It blew my mind. I couldn't believe what I was seeing.
Mm.
And that was it. That was the, I spent the whole weekend watching it. And by the end of it, I said, yeah, I'm gonna give that a go.
How old were you at that stage?
I was about 28, 27 or 28.
People like you fascinate me, Deirdre. I swear to God. I'm like, because that's about the, I'm 29 now. I just can't imagine going to a comedy gig and going, you know what? Going to start doing that. Like that to me is like...
Well, at some point you decided to start a podcast. So what prompted that?
Well, I believe you. No, you got me there, yeah? You're good.
Is there anyone that stood out at that festival then that someone must have been like, right?
There was one person there was a comedian called Anthony Clark. He was American. He was from Boston. And I watched his set one night and I thought, oh, that's hilarious. So I went back to see it again. Because remember, I was getting in free. And I think on the third or fourth time, I finally realised, oh, he's not changing this at all. Whereas other comics, I thought, oh, this is impossible. This is a stream of consciousness. They're making it up on the spotlight. They're geniuses. But then I realised, oh, you've written this bit and you've learned it and you're performing it. And I thought, well, that's not unlike what I do as an actor.
Yeah, it's just learning the lines.
Exactly,
except
that
I have to write the lines, which I hadn't done before. But I still thought it's doable. If I can think of something funny, you know what I mean? And straight away, in fairness, I have been cast at that point in the 10 years of acting, I've been cast in a lot of comedies. So I probably, I don't know if I was aware that I had funny bones, but I was in a lot of comedy.
Yeah.
So that was it. I started writing jokes in the car on the way home and I went back to that festival
that quick,
12 months later.
Like that quick, you were like, I'm going to do this and it's on the way home, you're like, I'm doing
it now. I wasn't even that driven. I didn't expect it. I was being driven in the car. But I wasn't expecting it to actually happen as fast as it did. But I got an open spot and I did it and it went well. And then they just said, well, let's just give you the next one immediately because, you know, if people don't get up again straight away, they won't because it's so hard. It's so terrifying. So they just kept doing that. They just kept saying, you know, do the next one. I'll book you the next one. So I was just kind of started getting up more or less week after week. I don't think that would happen now. The business is much more saturated and way more people in it. It's hard to even to get those slots. But there was nobody around then.
Yeah. See the way you said there, the first one went well. So they said, right, we'll get you back up again. Mm. Do you think you're trying to push it back up until the first time you died on your hole? Because everyone always says they died on the hole straight away.
Oh, really? I think it was just decency. I think it was just comics being decent and saying, look, this is how it goes. If you don't get up quickly and just keep going, it's easy to just sort of stop and not bother. So they were just being kind and generous, I think. Yeah.
So was the idea of you starting just now to, you understood then that these comedians, everything wasn't improv. So you could see...
Yes. The penny drop moment. Yeah. That was because I had seen other comics who were not doing the same thing, gig after gig. So I thought, oh, this is some up. I couldn't get a handle on what they were doing. But because this one act that I really liked was showing me exactly what he was doing, you know, by the third time I was going, okay.
I can do that.
Your act.
Yeah.
I just thought I can do that. Is not impossible. You just had to have ideas. And I did have ideas. It really was, you know, a road to Damascus moment. Like it was my jaw was hitting the floor. Like I just couldn't believe this. And I think I'd done 10 years of theatre and theatre is very polite. Mm. There's a lot of etiquette and all of that. And it's very formal. And you probably have to do some classic plays and stuff that I wasn't interested in. I was always very drawn to new writing and new plays. And, you know, I probably was just a little bit edgier. I just wanted to do edgier stuff.
Yeah.
And when I saw the comedy, and they were all laughing and blind and doing what they wanted and the audience talking to them, I was like, oh, this is insane. Yeah. And straight away, I thought, it was the anarchy of it that I loved. I thought, that's just a lie. It's alive.
Yeah, because you spoke there as well a minute ago about how saturated it is now, or it wasn't back then. There was nobody really doing it back then, but especially there wouldn't have been a lot of females doing it back then.
Very few.
So what was that like for you going into that industry then as a female?
Well, I think that's why I was so late into it, because it wouldn't have occurred to me.
Right.
You know that phrase, if you can't see it, you can't be it. I certainly didn't see any, even, and that festival is a good example of this. Cat Laughs at the time, I think there were 35 comedians as part of the festival, and I think three of them were females, three or four were females. So, and that was an international festival. So there were very, very few, and I'd never seen anybody live before, and I hadn't even seen a female on the telly. So this was news to me. But then on the live circuit, I would always be the only one on the bill. Occasionally, I might cross over with Anne Gildea, Palm Boyd. That was it. The Newlas.
So you said the whole you can't see, you can't be. Was there anyone that inspired you growing up, medium was?
No, because I didn't watch comedy. And even if I did, I didn't make that connection. Do you know what I mean? I probably remember watching Dave Allen as a kid. My parents loved him. But I didn't make any connection with, there's a man sitting in a chair telling funny stories. That to me is, that's a man telling stories. So you would never be thinking, I could do that because he was an older person. Do you know what I mean? It just doesn't, I think unless you see somebody like you, it just doesn't occur to you. But my mother was funny and dramatic and our house was noisy and busy. And I always thought it was insane. I always thought our house was mad. You know, in a good way. Like you would have to fight for your space to talk. And she also would say things to me like, any crack, was there any crack up the town? And if you said no, she would be just like so disappointed. She'd be like, just make it up, love, make it up. But it was like, have a story for me. Do you know what I mean? Like, don't be boring the whole love anyway. Like, if you need to have a story. And if you have to make it up, that'll do.
Yeah.
And here I am.
Yeah, it's a fancy now.
Making it up. Yeah.
Talk to us about that journey through stand up then. So you're saying you didn't die in your whole early door, so obviously it was going to build enough. So
I didn't really die much at all, is the truth.
Yeah.
I had the odd horror, as we all do in Camden at 2 o'clock in the morning when you've got a hen night in, you're just trying to survive. That's not about comedy, that's about survival.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
But I didn't really die a lot. I had some horrible gigs, but never like, to me, dying is losing the room. You know, the room starts talking and you are dead. And I didn't really have that.
Yeah.
So that was encouraging, I guess. I mean, and I'm genuinely, for the first 2 years, I used to have horrible headaches. I would, by the time I'd get to, say, the International Bar, if I was going on there to 10 or 15 minutes, I'd have these awful headaches that I didn't understand were just stress headaches, just tension in your body. And I didn't even know what that was. Clueless. But I was doing well and I was getting paid and I couldn't believe what they were paying me. I mean, it wasn't huge money, but compared to say you were getting £400 or £500 for a week in the theatre, they might have been giving me £100 for 20 minutes, or sometimes I'd get £200 for 20 minutes. I was like, this is a fortune. I thought this was a fortune compared to what I had was used to getting in the theatre. I was like, well, just keep doing it, love, because you don't have a choice, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
The reason why you mentioned dying in your hole and the whole thing of like going into comedy at that age is the amount of comedians we've had on this podcast, and you talk about losing the room. We've heard some of the stories on this.
Some bad ones. It puts you off going into comedy because you know, like, it's inevitable.
They're stories of dying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because everyone has stories. One.
Everyone.
Like, it has to happen to me. I don't want that, you know?
Everyone has one, yeah. And everyone has more than one.
Yeah.
I just don't have a standout. I do remember the hen night in Camden particularly well. It was pretty grim. And I remember thinking, you need some dick jokes now, Dee, and you don't have any.
Yeah. Was there a moment where you thought, right, this is definitely what I'm going to do? Like,
do you know what? My attitude to stand-up was always quite bad, actually, because I think I saw it. I think when I looked at it and thought I could do this, I think I thought it would be the perfect filler for when I was in between acting jobs. So I never gave it the full attention that it deserved. I always saw it as, be grand now, I could do that. And, you know, when I'm not working, which is regularly, which unfortunately wasn't great. I wish I'd had the foresight to see, actually, you're good at this and this could be a proper job. You could do well at this. I just didn't think like that and I just didn't see it. And I couldn't see myself just being that person. I don't know why.
Yeah.
My vision was quite limited.
You just had a love for acting then, was it?
Yeah. Yeah. I wasn't giving up on the acting. I loved the acting.
It's
just your primary focus. Like.
So,
yeah.
See, with the acting then, as you're growing in comedy, did you find it hard then to get roles that weren't comedic? In acting?
Probably. Yeah, probably. I mean, people do are, you know, going to think of you in comedic terms. First of all, oh God, it's such a tough job being an actor. Christ, people think comedy's hard. I think the acting's worse. You just have so little control. I think that's the thing I appreciate the most about the stand-up. I don't need anybody to hire me. I'll just hire myself.
Yeah.
And that is a very nice feeling.
Because we were chatting off air as well, though, when you were saying your daughter's going into acting now.
Yeah.
And would you advise it?
No, of course I wouldn't advise it. I mean, who would advise it? There's so too many actors and not enough work. Like, they're the facts. You just have to be very lucky, very good, and you just have to hope there's a part coming down the line for you.
Yeah, it's only one break as well that you need.
Yeah, in a way, you just getting that first job, I think, is hard as well. Getting on the ladder, just getting in on the game. Mm. But it's a part-time job. Just a little more.
So you moved over to London?
Yes.
Did you find a big difference between the scenes over here and over there?
Well, I didn't do any stand-up in London, which was a bit mad. I think I had done about 8 years of stand-up when I went, and I was a bit tired of it. I wasn't loving it. So I'm loving the stand-up now, but I didn't love it when I did it the first time. So I took a 10-year break out of stand-up and came back. So this is my second bite of the cherry. So I'm in this now 8 years. But I stopped doing it back then. And I think a lot of it was there weren't any women. It wasn't a scene like it is now. Like, the girls are flying right now.
Yeah.
They're really flying. And I'm so glad I'm a part of it and that I came back in and I'm able to enjoy this moment. God, it's lovely to see. It really is. It's so nice to see. Me having been a part of the men's world for so long. So I'm enjoying this now like I never did the first time out.
Mm.
What was your question? I don't think I've answered it.
No, well, you did. You kind of told us that you weren't into the comedy.
Oh, yeah. So I didn't do any stand-up in London. Yeah. That was my point, yeah.
Why did you take that break?
I think I had gone as far as I could. I thought, I've gone as far as I can go here.
Right.
As a comic and as an actress. And I thought, if people want to hire me, they will. They know where I am. And so, yeah, I think I just wanted to change the scene.
You just kind of threw the towel in on them.
Yeah, all I did was go and have babies. That's all I did. So I made a balls of it. Like, I really did.
Yeah, because it's a long break to take. Like,
yeah.
No, I didn't take a break out of the business. I was acting.
I was acting
for the first
comedy, yeah.
Yeah, but I didn't know stand-up.
All you were doing, though, was just making new material, if you look at it that way. And then 10 years, you're having kids.
Well, listen, when I did go back, I think it was 10 years later, the first show I wrote about was the shock of parenting. Yeah, that was an hour and a half.
Yeah.
I thought.
And you had to cut loads of it.
I just thought, I can't believe. Because at that time, nobody was talking about it. And all of my mates in comedy were men and they had children. And I did not hear them talking about parenting. I was going, what's going on here? You're not obsessed with the dinners in the way that I'm obsessed with the dinners. So I thought this, I have to examine this. This is out there. So that's what brought me back. Really a desire to say something about what I was doing. I just thought, I have to talk about this.
So you took the break, would you say it's more so to focus on the family? So you said you were having a load of kids.
Well, I say that, but it was just a lazy article.
You were gonna...
Good excuse, though. It's a good excuse.
Great excuse. Yeah. I gave it up for the kids.
Yeah.
Lie.
You were going to pack her in, though, permanently, but a small comedian
decision.
And Billy Connolly talked her over.
I hadn't decided to pack it in, but I mean, I suppose after 8 years you start thinking, oh, I probably won't go back now.
Yeah.
But then, as I said, I had the kids and it was very organic. I thought, I really do have something to say now. So I started writing another show. The Billy Connolly moment was lovely. Did you want me to tell you that?
Yeah, please. Do you know who Billy Connolly is?
No.
That's mad.
I've heard of him, though.
Wow, no. This is generational.
He's a comedian, I'd imagine, yeah?
Well, like, he
from back in the day,
he could be Mount Rushmore.
He's the biggest comedian that Scotland ever produced.
Yeah,
outside of Kevin Bridges. He's probably, he's one of the biggest comedians in the world.
Yeah.
I know, by the way, comedians talk about him.
Yeah.
So, like, I think Will was the first comedian to do the gay at since Billy Connolly. And then any comedian that even mentions his name, their eyes light up. They're like, Billy Connolly.
What age are you, Terry?
29. I'm only young.
You're only a baby, yeah.
Yeah. I think you should still know who Billy Connolly is.
Should I?
Yeah.
Well, when did if he you stop don't, you comedy? Don't.
About 10 years ago.
If you don't, you don't.
I'm surprised that I don't then, yeah. And I like comedy as well, but like, yeah. I'll just select for you.
Yeah.
Champ me, yourself and all Deirdre.
I hope so.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know who he is, but...
I was trying to think about her in a football sense. He'd be like, say, Alan Shearer.
Okay.
In terms of like...
Yeah.
He was unbelievable at the time. They all reference him. But like, kids these days having a clue who he is. Even though he's still around, he's not in comedy anymore.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
He influenced like generations of comedians.
Yeah.
He was the man for a long time.
Like Kevin Bridges had posters of him in the gallery.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, like that's, I got it.
But not just him. Frankie Bull would be inspired by him as well.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like everybody.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Everybody. Except you. Do you feel out of it now?
Yeah, I feel left out over here.
Going home YouTube now for the whole night, Billy Connolly.
You're in for a treat. You're going to love it.
What's the story with Billy then?
The story with Billy was that we were invited to go to Montreal. Montreal Comedy Festival is a very famous festival. And everybody used to say, oh, if you could get booked to go to Just for Laughs, you know, you can get a telly career. It was all built, all hyped out of all proportion. You know, you could get a sitcom like this. Now, obviously, sitcom and that kind of thing was big in my head because I thought that was probably my natural trajectory. Mm. If we'd had a Saturday Night Live in this country, I would have been going at that. Like, seriously, that would be my thing. So in answer to your question, if I had to pick one, something like Saturday Night Live really is comedy acting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like live and all the rest of it. It would have been, I just would have been, that would have been my dream. But anyway, so Montreal was like sold to us all as this is a way. You could get into America here now, this way. Do you know that kind of thing?
Yeah.
Absolute nonsense. Anyway, we went and we had two very bad shows. One was a Monday night. I'm superstitious about comedy on Mondays. Doesn't fucking work. And it didn't for us. Half the audience were French and were not interested. It just wasn't. It wasn't a good experience. Second night, a bit better, but not great. Anyway, we were going home. Third night, we were going home. And we realised that the comics were really just arriving. The festival was a week long and there were some very heavy hitters arriving into the hotel. We're all staying in the same hotel. And like Chris Rock and people were arriving. Well, I went into a deep depression. I was like, we're leaving while they're arriving. I just thought this was the end of the world. So I did what everybody does and I got hammered at the bar. And I thought, fuck this. And we just drowned our sorrows and are kind of like, this is, somebody has really shafted us. You know, it was a sad story. Like, but anyway, the next day I was very hungover and our flight was in the afternoon. I said, fuck this. And we were going to Edinburgh Fest. And Edinburgh Fest is a marathon. It is a really grueling 7 nights a week for a month and you are on and it's tough. And I had a show that I didn't have an ending to. So I was starting to panic and I was starting to go, oh my God, there has to be an easier way. I can't, like, there has to be an easier way to make a living. This kind of carry on. And I was so badly hungover that I was walking through the streets of Montreal looking to buy shoes. I thought, if I buy shoes, that'll fix everything. And I couldn't even see shoes. I thought, oh, I'm going back to the hotel. This is too depressing. And I think just before I did that, in my head, I was having one of those existential moments where I was saying, like, could you give me a sign? Am I even on the right path? Like, should I just give this shit up? It's so hard. And that was when I put my hand out to hail a taxi and I hit somebody. And when I turned around, I said, I'm so sorry. It was Billy Connolly. And I was just like, you know, the head on me with the hangover. I said, Billy Connolly, like, what the fuck are you doing here? And he said, oh, I'm making a movie. Straight into the chats. I'm making a movie. What are you doing? I said, oh, I'm here for the comedy festival. The comedy festival. So he said, oh, how's it going for you? I said, terribly, terribly. And we ended up having this quite big chat. And I was kind of like, you know, got in a taxi, kind of mind blown, thinking, wow. Like, I asked for a sign and I literally bumped into Billy Connolly. And I was kind of buoyed by this. And then packed up and got to the airport. We were queuing for our flight. And I realised that Billy Connolly was just a couple of people ahead of me. And he turned around, he looked at me and he said, are you stalking me now? And then we ended up chatting. We were going all the way down to the gate. We chatted all the way down. And then kind of when it was time to board, I said to him, you'll be going into first class now and I'll be going down the back with the McVitie's. And I said something to him like, if this flight goes down, I can't remember this joke now, you'll be, who's the fella who got killed on the airplane? When La Bamba was down the back, he definitely won't know, Mr. 29 over there. Buddy Holly, thank you. Buddy Holly was up the front and the kid who sang La Bamba was sitting down the back. Remember when they died in the airplane crash? So anyway, I said to Billy Connolly, Christ almighty, this is overexplained, can't be funny now, I said, if this plane goes down, I said, I won't get a mention. I won't get mentioned. I said, you'll be Buddy Holly up the front and I'll be the little unknown kid down the back. And anyway, he laughed. That was the only laugh I got in Montreal. Was from Billy Connolly. But I told that story then as the ending to my Edinburgh show.
It's madness. That's all just madness to me. Like, you're looking for this sign, you're going around hung on, Billy Connolly shows up, there's your
Scottish Messiah.
Like, okay.
In fairness, he does look like something out of Bible as well.
He totally does. He's an angel, and you couldn't bump into a nicer person. Because
has he got the long hair?
Yeah.
And all, has he?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
But get up a picture of Billy Connolly there to show.
Watch his shit, show me now. I'll be like, oh yeah, watch him every night.
Didn't know his name was Billy.
I bet you he's going to say, ah yeah.
Never seen that bloke in me life.
This is hilarious.
He could be anyone to me.
And he's so huge, isn't he? He's funny. Real tall.
It's
well.
So funny. But I have this with my kids all the time. Well, I have a child who's 21.
But, yeah, like, but
you'll,
really... say,
you'll mention singers and artists and they'll just go, never heard of.
Yeah, but he doesn't know Buddy Holly is either.
No.
It was Buddy Holly now.
Do you know the song American Pie?
Yeah.
That was wrote about the day he died.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, the day the music died is the day Buddy Holly died in the plane crash. Did you know that one?
There's... Well, I think I knew it and I forgot it.
Ah, that old chestnut.
That's no good. Sure it's not. But it's ringing a bell. But that is a... Who wrote The Day the Music Died?
Don McLean. Well, he sang it anyway, so I'd imagine he wrote it.
Madonna covered it.
Yeah, terribly, by the way.
Terribly,
I've seen Beth
have a
covers.
Word with your people. It was your fault, dear. Terribly, by the way.
I've seen Beth that covers in Goinies.
Yeah.
But Daniel special. Yeah. We're going to be watching a whole special and be like, is she for fucking...
You'll be coming looking for commission.
Yeah.
At that stage when you had met Billy, why are you thinking about giving her up away? Just in bad form.
I was just kind of demented with the whole thing. Just going, this is... I was heading into a month of Edinburgh. I've just had a terrible time in Montreal. Like, what am I doing? Like, there's... You know, it can be grueling. It can be grueling when you're starting out. That's why I'm enjoying it so much now. Like, the actual satisfaction and the gratification of having sold out houses is something that is hard earned.
Mm.
When you get it, it's to be enjoyed. So I am enjoying it because, you know, there's all those stories.
Yeah, yeah. Of course. Yeah, that's probably the part that people don't see enough of or heard enough of.
They don't see and they don't understand that it takes anywhere between 5 and 10 years to
Make
it.
There's no real overnight success.
There's no shortcut. There's nobody making it in half an hour. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're just not. You need stage time. You need the air miles. You need to learn technique. It just takes time.
Who's your favourite comedians in Ireland at the moment, male and female?
Oh God, there's so many. So many. You know, I couldn't pick out one or two. I mentioned the girls, so let's talk about the girls because they're having a moment.
Well, they're running amok.
Yeah.
You see, Joanne, she's selling out about 1,000 nights.
But Joanne has broken the mold on every... Even the men didn't do what Joanne's doing.
Like,
what Joanne's doing is... She's a glitch in the system. Like, it's just incredible. She is. Like, it's Elvis, I call her. Like, she is just gone.
Yeah.
To the stratosphere. You couldn't even hope to catch her. Like,
yeah, she's gone.
It's just something other.
It feels like she's putting her hands to the podcast, the comedy.
No, the podcast was the start.
Yeah.
It was the podcast hit.
Yeah.
And that was it. The girls who loved the pod came out to see the live shows. And I think that Joanne has lifted us all up because what happened with that was women started going to comedy when they didn't go before. And then, so I think, you know, a lot of the time, I have been doing it obviously a long time and there were women coming to see me, but I always had maybe 30 or 40% men in my audience. Whereas I know a lot of women now have a majority of their audience is female.
Yeah.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. I think she introduced comedy to younger generations, and it was post-COVID, remember, nothing had been going on for those couple of years. I think people were dying to get out. They'd been listening to this pod through COVID, and it was kind of it just snowballed. And I think then they were out and they thought, oh, this is a great night out. An hour and a half of laughing. Great. Mm. Let's go to, what's she doing? What's Deirdre O'Kane doing? What's she doing over there? So I think she's lifted up a lot of people. And now, like Emma, my pod pal, is flying. She's gone through the roof. And so has Kyla Cobbler, and Alison Spittle's doing great. And, you know, the women are just on one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Seeing Enya Martin's just touched down in Australia. Doing it all.
Crazy.
Today, like, she just landed in Australia.
Yeah.
It's madness.
Yeah, isn't it?
And that's thanks to the Instagram. You know, we didn't have, like, when I started out, there was no Instagram. There was no internet.
Yeah.
So you couldn't reach your audience in the way you can now.
So see, when you took the break and you came back, what was the biggest shock for you coming back into it?
There wasn't one, to be honest with you. This hadn't quite kicked off. The Instagram and pods hadn't quite kicked off. That happened a couple of years later, 3 or 4 years later maybe. So when I went back into it, I remember one of my first gigs back was the Cat Laughs in Kilkenny. And I was on a bill. I wasn't doing a solo show. I was on a bill. And Rich Hall, who is an incredible comedian and plays a guitar, was on the stage, and I was going on after him. Now, comics never want to follow acts with guitars because they bring the house down and you've just got your voice. Anyway, Rich was on, giving it socks and bringing the house down. I thought, Jesus Christ, who has put me here now? I actually thought somebody was thinking, oh, you're coming back, are you? Come back, we'll show you. Good luck. And I remember really having a moment and sort of steeling myself and saying, well, this is it. This is the difference between the boys and the men now. You may just go out and fucking do it. Yeah. You know, it's like, I remember thinking, this is not the time to die. Yeah. This is not a moment to fail. Like, just do it. And I did, and it was a good gig, and I was able to follow him. And then I think that really gives you confidence. I think if you think, if I can follow an act that I really respect, like him, and, you know, he's brought the house down with the guitar, and if you can follow that, you can pretty much do anything.
You said the social media thing wasn't really that big when you came back.
No, it hadn't kicked off yet.
If it had been kicked off, would you have considered taking the break, or how you went about taking the break?
I honestly don't know. I honestly don't know the answer to that. I mean, when I came back, 2 years after I came back, I ended up doing Dancing with the Stars. And that's why I went on Instagram. Jane Russell, who's my agent, she said to me, you have to. Like, you have to have an account to go on Dancing with the Stars because you're going to ask people to vote for you and everything. I hadn't a fucking clue. So I started it on that show. And I'm so grateful I did, because I'd be so left behind. And it would have been so easy to just get left behind. Mm. Whereas I'm kind of still up there with all these young ones who are breaking through, and I've been doing it for 30 years.
Yeah.
So it's nice to be in the mix, and not just in the mix, like, and have a sold out tour, and I've got another one coming in September. So it's,
yeah, I was kind of coined to say that. It's not like if you're just taking part in it, like,
no, exactly. I'm at the races. I'm enjoying the races. Yeah.
Yeah. You have your tour coming up.
I have a new show. So this one is still going.
Right, yeah.
It finishes at the end of May, and the new one goes up in September.
Right. Fucking so, hell. So it's go.
Yes.
Is it draining towards the end, or do you love it? A lot of comedians actually kind of like towards the end of the show, they say, because at the start of the show, they can tweak their own show as they're going. And by the end of it, you have the perfect show, they feel.
By the end, it's a polished diamond, and you're kind of going, I'll never write a show as good as this. But you have to remember, it's after taking a year and a half to get it to that perfect state.
Yeah.
Anyway, no, I'm looking forward to the end, but I'm enjoying, because I'm on a European tour. Like, I'm doing Amsterdam and Oslo and Berlin and Barcelona and those kind of, and quite a few in England. So they're the last ones, and the final night is in Ballinasloe. The 29th of May.
Yeah.
Would you ever buy tickets, lads?
Where can you get the tickets?
DeirdreO'Kane.net.
That simple.
That simple. And the new show is called All the Rage, and that's on sale as well.
Brilliant. What's this one called? The current one.
O'Kane-ing it.
Right, I like it.
You have your own podcast as well.
With Emma Dorn, yes, called Keep It Tight. And that's flying, thank God. I was watching Emma online. I just thought, this one's hysterical. So I messaged her and I said, if you're ever thinking about doing a pod, are you ever interested in doing a pod, let me know. So she said, yeah, let's talk. So that was it. I didn't know her very well at all.
I was going to say, so you just jumped into it like that?
Yeah, we knew each other from the business, but like we hadn't hung out massive amounts. Like I couldn't have told you an awful lot about her. I just knew, I thought she was funny. I liked what she was doing. Mm. And then, yeah, we really did just hit it off. We're mad about ourselves.
yeah, but you're enjoying the podcast in it as well, aren't you? Like,
yeah.
Like that,
it doesn't feel like work. I mean, obviously there is work, there's a bit of prep and all of that, but it doesn't feel like, it's not hard work. When the relationship is fluid and easy, that's not hard work. If I'd say if I was working with somebody, I was thinking, oh God, she's talking too much now, or I'm talking too much, or oh God, there's a bit of a lull. And you know, because one will just naturally pick it up. When it's working, that's the beauty of it. You're not even aware that it's a working thing. You just know.
Yeah.
One is picking up energy when the other isn't. What am I telling you for? You're looking at me going, we know this, Deirdre. We've been doing this for years.
Yeah, no, God, but we've actually explained this loads of times as well. We more so explain it to the listeners when we're doing live shows.
Yes.
There's a safety net in not being on your own up there on the stage. So I know I'm probably going to fuck her up at some stage. Probably going to stutter.
Welcome to the world of stand-up.
Yeah, do you know what I mean?
Where you are very much alone.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. That's where like the fear of that comes in with me. It's like you're up there on your own. So
it's a lovely thing, isn't it?
Fuck the stand-up thing, no. Honestly, that's my worst fear. It's my worst fear. Fuck that. Terrific.
So funny, isn't it, that a lot of people say it's their worst fear.
Honestly.
And for years, when people would say to me, what is it like? I used to say, well, it's like being a best man. Because that was kind of the closest thing that I could think of, that most people understand the pressure of being a best man. You really are expected to be funny, you know, and you're getting up on your own, all of that.
You have to drive the show, yeah.
Yeah.
Deirdre, you were in some iconic Irish comedy films, I would say, that I think we need to bring back. And that kind of genre, like
intermission.
Where's that gone? You know what I mean? I think like there's such an appetite for
you
films.
Where
like
are
that.
Those movies?
That's what
from?
I mean, like, yeah. You ever see Intermission 30?
No.
Oh my God, what are we going to do about Terry? He's seen nothing.
I'd be pretty jealous.
This is so, it's kind of refreshing.
Yeah, I'd be jealous of him because I wish I could go home now and know exactly what I'm going to watch tonight, you know what I mean? Like, there you go home, watch Billy Connolly on YouTube and Intermission try out.
Intermission, I mean, won't he love it?
Iconic, Terry.
What is that? Explain. It's like Father Ted, is it?
No, it's a film.
Oh, right.
It's a film, yeah.
It's a gang. It's a kind of a gangstery. Would we call it a gangster? No, it's not gangsters. Actually,
it's comedy though. Like,
it's pure comedy.
It's not like do you know what I mean. They're not trying to be like a gangster film.
And a lot of very
Colin Farrell's in it.
A lot of very big film stars are in it, but they weren't big film stars then. Well, like, Colin was on his way. He wasn't a huge star. He had begun. Cillian Murphy is in it.
Colomini
in it. I'm in it.
Go home.
I'll definitely watch it.
Oh, yeah.
Me mate, Deirdre.
Punching a face off some young lad in the bed. You've got that to look forward to now, Terry.
Yeah. But I think, like, when was the last time that you made a good Irish comedy film?
What's the Cork TV show that was the big hit?
The Young Offenders.
The Young Offenders. Didn't they make a feature film? I think that was a pretty big hit.
Yeah, maybe. And when was that? Probably about 8 years ago. More.
Guard. Remember the Guard? Yeah,
they're going back a bit though.
Yeah,
like,
you are
you'd be
going
surprised.
Back. You are going back.
I'm on about like since say 2020. So we're in 2026 now. There's enough time there that you could have made a good comedy, you know what I mean?
Do you know how hard it is to get a film made? Because I'm married to a filmmaker.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Let's have a competition. Which is the hardest? Acting, stand-up, or filmmaking?
Yeah.
I play filmmaking. Because it costs so much bloody money.
Yeah.
It's getting the money.
Surely.
And also writing a good screenplay is, that takes serious talent. To write a cracking screenplay. Like Mark Gorow, who wrote Intermission, is an incredible writer. Like he really is. He's astonishingly good.
Yeah, so there you go.
Just saying.
There we are.
It's not that
just
simple.
Saying.
Yeah.
Not that simple. No. So Deirdre, end of May, there's still tickets available for the closing stages of your tour.
Well, let's sell Oslo. Will we sell Oslo?
Boy, not yet. You'd be surprised.
In Oslo.
Yeah.
Listen to this.
We only done this the other day. We went through all the numbers.
Right. Berlin, Amsterdam.
Yeah.
Oslo.
So, in our top 10.
Copenhagen.
Top 10 countries where, like, our most listens are. Germany's there, Holland is there.
Wow. Mm-hmm. If I sell tickets Spain, on the it? If British I sell you. Tickets in Berlin on the back of this, I'll take you out for pints.
We don't drink.
Oh, for God's sake. Cheap dates. Great news. I don't have to do anything.
You'd be surprised.
Did neither of you drink?
No.
Did you ever?
Yeah, not into it.
Not into it. No. Doesn't suit you.
It's not for us.
Great.
Definitely not for me. Definitely not.
And you still haven't seen any of these movies, and you've got all this time on your hand.
Time on me.
What are you doing?
Do you know how long it took him to get to watch The Shawshank?
I watched The Shawshank last year.
Did you enjoy it?
Well, after a year.
Very good. No, it was very good. That's good.
After a year of us telling him every week, have you watched The Shawshank yet? No. And then we'd move on and then come back in the next week to record. I'm like, what about now? And he'd be like, no. I'm like, what are you doing in them 7 days?
So the drink didn't suit either of you.
No.
Tell us this. Were you lunatics on the drink? Or did you feel ill? Or what?
We're about.
This is very refreshing now.
This is the new way of what.
There's an awful lot of people who don't feel great on it, but they're not giving it up.
I think they should.
I agree.
Yeah. This is what we're trying to say.
Absolutely agree. Now, on the other hand, it suits me down to the ground.
Yeah, okay.
I'm a great little drinker.
Yeah. Now, we're not saying don't drink, but just try your hand at not drinking.
I'm a light drinker.
Yeah.
You know, I never had an issue with it. Like.
Yeah. Try your hand at not drinking and see how that goes. You know what I mean? It might be for you.
You never hear this.
Yeah.
I mean, you
nowadays you do. That's the right thing to be saying nowadays.
It's hard to know. You kind of, one minute you think, oh God, they're all going to the gym and they're all very healthy. Then the next thing you realise, God, no, they're all knocking it back in the park. And they're...
Yeah, there's uproar over trying to ban single-use vapes and all. People are like, what are you doing? You can't ban them. You're like, oh, right, sorry.
Yeah.
Didn't know so many people used them.
Yeah. Anyway, very refreshing to hear the two of you are off it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah. So there we are.
Machen buchels.
So if you're in Berlin, Amsterdam, Oslo, buy fucking
Copenhagen
tickets and let us know. Copenhagen.
Yes.
Yeah, but let us know that you bought the tickets because you're here to hear.
Yeah.
Because
yes,
gonna
please
have to
let the
Deirdre.
Boys know.
Yeah.
And I'll buy them
something nice.
A coffee slice.
Coffees.
You can't go wrong with a coffee slice.
What's a coffee slice?
A cake. Coffee slice. You don't know what a coffee slice is.
I don't think I know what a coffee slice is.
My last birthday, my missus went into Super Value and ordered a big coffee slice.
Oh, that's the dream. The dream. I'm not messing with you. And a cup of tea.
A spice bag and intermission. A coffee slice.
Yeah.
You could if you want. We're not going to knock it.
Like, you just keep adding to that. We're not going to tell you to stop. Like.
Yeah.
And a pair of runners? No, sound, no problem.
And a bottle of wine? Fuck off, Deirdre.
Spends 20 minutes telling her that she doesn't drink. And a bottle of wine?
Ah, for our shelf. She likes a wine, don't you, Deirdre?
I like a wine.
Yeah.
I'm a gin and tonic girl, though.
Hey, yeah.
Whoa, now see that? That just sounds like a holding cell to me.
Yeah, that's trouble.
Yeah.
Anyone who drinks spirits,
Mountjoy.
Yeah. They've no regard for humanity.
Straight away.
You know that?
I have the one gin and tonic.
I have two gin and tonics from now. I'd say I'd be in Mountjoy and all at 6:30. It's 20 then.
Hilarious. Hilarious. I think that's gas.
Yeah, bad news.
I'd die now without my gin and tonic.
Would you? Yeah. So you're here to like, you're rebelling against us.
Yeah.
I'm not rebelling against you at all. I am delighted with the two of you.
Yeah.
I think it's refreshing. I do. I've watched way too many people ruin their lives.
Yeah.
We were on that path, and we're like, you know what? That was off at the next stop.
Deirdre, you're a legend. Thanks very much for coming on.
Deirdre O'Kane and .net.
It's
a weird
Deirdre
one,
okay.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
It's mad official or something.
Was .com taken?
No idea.
.net, like, that sounds, that's official, that.
Yeah. That's all government stuff, isn't it?
Have you got it wrong?
I don't think I have got it wrong, but I'll tell you what, I'm going to check because... my agent would fire me.
Yeah.
If I came on here and said
there's some Deirdre O'Kane in Bleeding, Ohio or like that.
Selling out shows to beat the band.
There must be. DeirdreO'Kane.net. It is .net.
It's a bit
and shy. Look at all my tickets, all my lovely tickets for sale. All the rage. Look at them. Look at them.
What are they all separate dates?
No wonder she's telling us just to go onto the website and she's not plugging them.
Oh, you haven't the head for that. I'm dead for that.
Yeah, I actually meant to say to you, you were saying if there was like an SNL in Ireland, you would have been all over it. There's one in the UK now.
I know.
What do you think of that? You're not up for that? Throw your hat in the ring there.
No, I'd say they didn't come to me. It's for it's a young man's game.
Right.
Kids. It's young ones.
I seen your one is hosting it. You one off Dairy Girls, Nicola.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's hosting this week. So they'll always have a star hosted every week.
Yeah.
Nicola Coughlan, yeah.
Yeah.
Coughlan.
I was going to say Coughlan, yeah. Yeah,
Coughlan's right. This Coughlan has become a bit of a...
Is that what she's going with?
Americanized. I think the Americans are saying Coughlan, or somebody's saying Coughlan. It's Coughlan, isn't it?
You heard it once, didn't you, there? Yeah, like them cunts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't have anything with them.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't be into that, no?
Of course I'd be into it, but they're not asking me. I tell you what, I'd love to host it. Maybe they'll ask me to host it. I'd need to make it a bit bigger in the UK. But I'm on my way now. I'm still at the races.
Yeah, so get us our tickets for that show.
Yeah, come out, we're at the same amount of dates she has. There's a reason why she's not plugging them. I send you all to the website.
Yeah, just
trust me.
To the website.
No matter where you are in the world, there's a good chance she's performing near you.
Well, particularly whatever county you're in.
Yeah.
In this country, I would definitely be near you.
Or anywhere in Western Europe as well, by the looks of them dates.
Yeah.
Deirdre, thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you. Such a pleasure.
It's been
pleasure.
Thank you.
It's been educational.
Joy.
Yeah.
And nearly the joy. In the joy.
Oh, sorry.
After the gin and tonics.
Yeah.
No, it was badly told.
Yeah.
Edit that out.
Clip that up. Clip her up.
Yeah.
Right, we finished, Terry.
Yeah.
Take yourself as you want.
Boom.
That's us for this week. And thanks to the legends at Roy Style Furniture for supporting the podcast.
Speaking of great support, see what I did there? Roy Style has everything. And I mean everything. Sofa sorted. Beds covered. Dining table, 6 chairs. Boom. All in one house package. Plus the lads in the store are sound. They're not pushy, just helpful. And if you're an online shopper, no problem.
Visit www.roystyle.ie and when you shop in store, tell them that the two boys from the podcast sent you and they'll throw you in a little discount.
Don't sleep on this deal, unless it's on one of their mattresses, in which case, fair play.
So get down and get the gaff sorted. Right price, right style, right now.
Subscribe to this podcast for free on the Go Loud app. What you waiting for? Put your back in it. Just a little more. Throw your whip in it now. Fill your body up. Work it hard and long. When you finish that. The Hypnocker. Come down.